Okay, so I'm going to talk about some work on torsion D-brains, and this talk is based on work in collaboration with Jacques Distler and Rahul Mahajan. And I should say what I mean by torsion D-brains. By that, I just mean that these D-brains have charges which correspond to torsion elements in K-theory. And in this talk, I'm going to focus on K0. These brains have become popular in physics recently, starting with the work of Sen. Namely, Sen constructed some non-BPS but stable particles, D particles, for example, a D particle in type 1 string theory. His constructions were then reinterpreted by Witten in terms of K theory, and in terms of K theory, Witten interpreted the stability as some charge conservation of a particle which carries a torsion charge in the K-theory group. In this talk, I'm interested in torsion in Calabi-Yau compactifications, so in geometrically somewhat interesting compactifications. And there are then some more or less obvious questions to address. The first type of question is within K-theory. We can ask, like, what is happening if we vary the bulk moduli, in particular the Kähler moduli? And in general, we know that we then expect some monodromies of the charge lattice, so it will come back to itself only up to an automorphism. And we can discuss this both for the quotient K modulo K torsion, but also for the torsion charge. Then we can ask all kinds of questions which go beyond K theory, like the moduli spaces of torsion D brains, their dynamics, and question related to stabilities. And finally, we can ask what the physics of the torsion brains is away from large volume. So in some examples, we have some information about the Stringer regime available fairly explicitly, namely in examples which have Gapner points, so points where we have a rational conformal field theory. And at those points, you can solve explicitly. And I'm going to say something about torsion D brains and at Gapner points. Then, K-theory does not only classify the D-brain charges, but also the possible Ramond-Ramond fields in the theory. So in particular, if we have some torsion in K-theory, this means that we can turn on some discrete Ramond-Ramond fluxes. And we can then ask, how does this Ramond-Ramond background flux change the spectrum of allowed D-brain charges? So this question was addressed recently in a paper by De Boer and other people. So this is the triples paper with many authors. Okay, so in my talk, I will first discuss an example where I will address like some of these questions, monodromies and torsion brains at Gapner points. And then I will move to another example where I will discuss how the Ramond-Ramond flux changes the D-brain spectrum. Okay, let me start by discussing some K-theory. So the most popular examples of Calabi-Yau compactifications in physics are probably like just hypersurface in some maybe weighted projective space. These spaces don't have torsion. This just follows by the Lefschetz hyperplane theorem. But a class of example which does have torsion are free quotients of such spaces. So we divide out some covering space which doesn't have torsion by a finite group action. This group acts freely on this covering space and it preserves the holomorphic free form so that the resulting space is a Calabi-Yau space X with torsion. So then, of course, you want to compute the torsion K-theory. We can do this by using some spectral sequences. We can first start using the Cartan-Leray spectral sequence. and compute the homology of the quotient from the homology of the covering space Y. Then from that we can also compute the cohomology. We can plug this into the Atiyah-Hirzebruch spectral sequence, which computes the K-theory of X from its cohomology. So on these K-groups, which we have now computed, we have some extra structure, namely we have some pairings. The first pairing goes from K0 times K0 to the integers, and it's just given by the index. This pairing has played a big role in the comparison of physics at large and small radius. The reason for this is that we have a physical description of this pairing in terms of the written index. So this is just trace minus 1 to the f in the Ramond sector evaluated in the open string sector with particular boundary conditions corresponding to those brains here. So in this talk, I'm going to talk about torsion brains. This pairing is going to give us zero whenever we plug in a torsion class here, just because it's bilinear. So instead, we have another pairing on the torsion part of the K theory, which this time goes from K0 to K1 to R mod Z. But I won't have much more to say about this here. So the first thing we can discuss are monodromies on these spaces X, which are quotients of spaces Y. So some monodromies are available quite generally in fairly explicit form. Like one example is a monodomy we have at large volume. Here we have a symmetry of the conformal field theory, which consists of shifting the B field by an integer cohomology class. And on the K theory, this just means that we have a monodomy which acts by tensoring these classes by a line bundle, and the first term class of this line bundle is this integral class there. Then we have singular points in moduli space where some brains become massless. An example for that is the conifold, or I should rather say its mirror. On the covering space Y, we know that at such a point, D6 brains become massless. This determines the monodomy around the conifold points as in terms of the written effect. So the conifold monodomy therefore has this form where this is like the K-theory class of the D6 brain. So on quotients, this monodomy is slightly modified. For example, if this group G is abelian, then not only the trivial line bundle will become massless at the conifold point, but in fact, like all flat line bundles will become massless, meaning that the monodomy takes the form that there's a multiplicity here, which is given by the order of by the amount of group elements in the group G, which is finite. So in the case of non-abelian G, this shape, this form of the monodomy seems to be also valid, meaning that some higher rank bundles also become massless. The volume of the whole Calabi-Yau is going to collapse at that point.
So if you say flat line bundles become massless, you mean their degree?
Well, I mean that not only that in addition to this brain, to this trivial bundle, I can also turn on like some flat line bundle on that, and all those brains will become massless too.
What's the V here?
This V, this is just like some arbitrary K-theory class, like some vector bundle on which the K-theory class on which this thing acts.
Okay.
Oh, did I actually finish this? No, I didn't know. They talk about the Gapner monodomy. But we can also have like some enhanced symmetry points in moduli space, like Gapner points. And at those points, the monodomy is also of a special form. Namely, if I raise it to a certain finite power, then the result will be unity, which is just because these Gapner points are like orbifold points in moduli space. Okay, so let me illustrate this in a very simple example, which is a free orbifold of the quintic hypersurface in P4. So I call the coordinates of the P4 Z1 to Z5, and I mod this out by a freely acting Z5 symmetry, which acts by scaling with this fifth root, with the fifth root of unity, and the power of the fifth root of unity is different for any coordinate. So this action has a fixed point in P4, but this fixed point is not on the hypersurface, so that the action is free on the quintic. We can then, using the techniques I outlined before, compute the cohomology of the space from the cohomology of the quintic. I've just listed this here. And then plugging into that here, Hirzebruch spectral sequence, we can also compute the K-theory, which is just z to the fourth power for the free part. And we have a torsion Z5 in this model. We can then just write down an explicit basis for K0. This consists of the trivial line bundle. Then in addition to that, I have the hyperplane bundle, which gives me a torsion class A, where I subtracted the class of the trivial line bundle from the class of the hyperplane bundle. Then I can raise this class to two more powers, so a squared and a cubed give me two additional generators. And I have this torsion class corresponding to the Z5. For this, I can write an explicit line bundle where I take the quintic times C and I mod out by the Z5 action, acting on this C by phase multiplication. This gives me a torsion line bundle and a corresponding torsion class in K-theory. Is this difference. So given this, I can compute all the pairings, and I can compute the monodomies, first the conifold monodomy, and then the monodomy at infinity. And from these two things, I can immediately compute the monodomy at the Gapner point in the large volume basis by just multiplying the conifold monodomy and the monodomy at infinity. I now want to discuss the Gapner physics of this model in somewhat more detail and map it to the large volume physics. So at small volume, this model has a description in terms of a Gapner model. This is well known for the quintic, which corresponds to a tensor product of five minimal models at level k equals 3. And now in our model, we have divided out the quintic by a further orbifold action, and we must mimic this in the CFT, which is like a straightforward orbifold action in the CFT. So in conformal field theory, we can then describe D-branes as some boundary states in rational conformal field theory, and we have heard some things about that in Greg's lectures. So in particular, the first step in doing such a thing is to impose some boundary conditions on the symmetry generators of the world sheet symmetry algebra. This is in our case an n equals 2 supersymmetry algebra. And we want to impose boundary condition on that. So our world sheet is the upper half plane, and the boundary of that is just the real line. So since we are discussing B-type boundary condition, since we are discussing K0, K-theory, the corresponding appropriate boundary conditions are B-type. I've listed them here. So on the real line, we want to relate the left moving stress energy tensor to the right moving stress energy tensor, meaning we require that there's no energy momentum flow across the boundary. Then we have a U1 current, and B-type boundary condition just means that we relate the left moving U1 current to the right moving U1 current. And then we have to accordingly impose boundary conditions on the supersymmetry generators, meaning that we relate the same type of supersymmetry generator, so G plus left to G plus right. That's enforced to us then by the boundary conditions on the current. So in the case that we want to describe BPS D-brains, we have to impose a further boundary condition on the spectral flow operator, which determines that there's a particular n equals 1 supersymmetry unbroken in space-time. The spectral flow operator can be written in terms of as an exponential of this boson phi left, and this boson is just a boson which bosonizes this this worksheet U1 current J left. Okay, so I impose a boundary condition on the spectral flow operator, and I have here a choice of a phase in between these two things. And this phase is the thing which specifies which particular U1 is unbroken in space-time, and it is exactly the phase which appears in the central charge for the BPS states. In this workshop, it already showed up in Paul's lecture, who kind of used this to motivate a grading, which we then have in the derived category description of brains. I'm just discussing B-type brains here, but in principle, if you want to discuss A-type brains, then you just have a sign here, and this boundary condition changes. And then you have a similar phase here. Sorry? Sorry?
I mean, those A-type brains, you can find the corresponding elements
to K0. No, they correspond to K1.
K1?
Yeah. For this quintic thing, I had this, I had like the cohomology here. And then, okay, if you want the Hodge numbers, you just have to divide the Euler number by 5, so minus 200 by 5, and then you have like this is still one parameter, and then you can compute the H2 ones from that. Okay, so in this talk, I'm not really interested in BPS brains, but I want, because I'm interested in these non-BPS but stable states, but I want to compute them as, I want to find them as superpositions of BPS brains, or I should rather say I want to find them in brain anti-brain systems where all Ramon-Ramon charge cancels except for this torsion charge. So that's why I introduced this here. Okay, so now in principle, I can go ahead and just construct rational boundary states, but I don't want to do that in this talk. I'd rather use an idea by Douglas and Diaconescu, who identified a certain set of rational boundary states on the quintics and the covering theory with fractional brains on C5 mod C5, meaning that in our orbifolded model, we have to consider fractional brains on the orbifold C5 mod C5 times C5. Okay, so let me briefly say why it's the right thing to consider those fractional brains. For this, I briefly flash how a phases description of that model would look like. So we can consider a linear sigma model realization of the covering theory on Y. That would be just a U1 gauge theory with 5 chiral superfields of charge 1 corresponding to those coordinates Z1 to Z5. And we have an additional chiral superfield of charge minus 5, which we denote P. Then a gauge invariant superpotential is given by P times this defining polynomial of the quintic. And we have a D flatness condition to impose, which I've written down here. Then the space of D flat configuration depends on whether this parameter R is positive or negative. So as usual, if I have R positive, I recover the geometrical regime, namely the D flat configurations, which also have P equals 0 parameterized at P4. And then if I impose the F terms, I arrive at a hypersurface in P4. And for R smaller than 0, I have generically that this P has some expectation value. And as a result, the gauge symmetry is broken to Z5, the Z5 acting on the Zi as a phase multiplication. So to here, we recover this C5 mod Z5 orbifold. And then the additional orbifold takes us to C5 mod Z5 times Z5. Then the rational B-type states are, in a sense, directly in all directions, which means that we can consider a basic set of brains here, which are the fractional brains of the orbifold. That's what I'm going to do now. So I have a basic set of boundary states of fractional brains, which are labeled by irreducible representations of the orbifold group. And I call those two labels corresponding to the different 2z5s, m and m prime, which take values 0, 2, 4, 6, and 8. And this m thing is the label which determines what is the remaining space-time supersymmetry. In particular, the phase e to the I pi m over 5 is the one which appeared in the boundary condition which I had on one of the previous transparencies. Okay, there's then a Z5 times Z5 quantum symmetry which acts on those brains. There's one generator corresponding to the first Z5, which has something to do with the with the GSO projection and this boundary conditions. This symmetry shifts just the M label by 2, and it leaves the M prime label unchanged. And there's another symmetry which corresponds to our additional symmetric V5, which leaves M untouched and just shifts the M primes by 2. Okay, so now we want to recover the torsion charge in some brain system consisting of brains and anti-brains. I said before that the intersection pairings played a big role in many of these investigations, and this is also the case here. Namely, we know that the intersection pairing should be annihilated by torsion brains. And so one thing we can do to look for torsion charges to compute the intersection pairings between all those fractional brains, and then look for something under which it is invariant. Okay, so we do that. We compute that pairing for all fractional brains, and we can write it in terms of those symmetry generators G and H. The result is written down here. And we see that this pairing doesn't really depend on H, or it's independent of H. I summarized all this brain content together with the pairing in this diagram, where I drew 25 dots for 25 brains. And I have the symmetry operation G, which is mapping along these lines from here to here and so on. And I have the symmetry operation H, which is mapping me out along the straight lines. And then the black lines in this diagram are supposed to be the intersections. So whenever I map with G, I have an intersection. Whenever I map with H, I don't have an intersection. So I don't have any intersections between the dots which lie on straight lines here. This makes one suspect that, this lets one conclude that H cannot act on the charges other than by changing the torsion charge. So it could, of course, be that H doesn't change any charge at all. But we can check this now. We can consider a brain and its H-transformed anti-brain. So if it's true that H changes the torsion charge, then this is a brain anti-brain system which only has torsion charge. Okay, so I can consider this system now and ask if I see some manifestation of torsion charge here. And so indeed I do. And namely, I can compute the open string spectrum of this system, and I see that this brain anti-brain system doesn't have any tachyons. That means that it's a stable system, and since there's no Ramond-Ramond charge in this system, there should be some other charge which stabilizes it, and this can only be the torsion charge. So we have found a stable system which seems to carry this charge. Sorry? Yeah, but there are no tachyons. I mean, there are no tachyons at this point, but of course you expect tachyons at other points, like at large volume, you would expect a tachyon. Well, I mean, it tells me that it's stable, and since there is this torsion charge, I can suspect that it's like, I mean, it's pretty much like in sense D particle system where you also have like D brain and anti D brains, and then in some regime of the moduli space, this thing is going to decay into something of lowest mass, and in other regimes of the moduli space, you have like a stabilized two particle system, and this is where we are now.
I mean, something is funny because I guess, I mean, at the other point, this brain and endocrine system might be fused in the single region.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If we don't have any potential to say, you know, the difficulty in the house, the connection to
the gifted point, so maybe they don't want to know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is indeed, I indeed want to kind of identify the K3 classes of the set of brains with which I've been dealing and see what they correspond to at large volume. So I want to map out this whole picture of the 25 fractional brains to large volume. And here I'm only interested in the K3 classes of those brains. So an easy way or a baby version how to do this is to identify first the symmetry operations G and H, which I had at the Gapner point. So the G is a thing which corresponds, which is like the enhanced symmetry at the Gapner point, and it therefore should be related to the monodomy around the Gapner point, and this is a symmetry operation which we already computed on one of the previous transparencies. Then the H was a generic quantum symmetry of this quotient space, And so quite generally we have some quantum symmetry here, which is G over the commutator G with itself. In our case, the G was abelian. And in the geometry, this group is represented by the torsion part of H2. And then we can represent this H geometrically by taking tensor products with flat line bundles. Okay, so I can now start from the trivial bundle, which wraps the whole Calabi-Yau, and generate 25 K-theory classes by applying G and H. So in this way, I can generate the same picture I had before at the Gapner point, like including that all the intersection numbers and everything agrees, and then see that this operating with H corresponds to like shifting the K-theory class by a torsion element. So this alpha was how I called my torsion in K-theory. So we had this brain-anti-brain pair at the Gapner point, and indeed we'd like to know something about it at large volume. So at large volume, this brain-anti-brain pair gets mapped to O and anti this flat line bundle, and we then indeed expect that we have like some tachyon at very large volume, and we can estimate that the mass squared of this field is just minus a half, and then plus corrections which involve one over the volume, so that at some point this thing can get massive. Okay, so at large volume we can't say anything more other than that the system is unstable and should decay into some brain of lowest mass which is carrying that charge, and we don't have like a concrete representative at this point here. So in the spirit of this workshop, we should also ask like, well, how is this thing represented in the derived category? And here we can just like write some sequence which involves these brains. But so generally, if we want to explain or mimic tachyon condensations in the derived category, we would say that we want to turn on a tachyon field here, like writing a non-trivial map here. But this line bundle with the torsion charge doesn't have holomorphic sections, and therefore this physical process is not really represented in this topological theory. Well, this doesn't mean that we cannot deform this complex in various other ways, like after we add some brain anti-brain pairs, but the straightforward rolling down the tachyon potential doesn't seem to be represented here. Yeah.
Throughout other things on, can you not shift the gradient of one of those?
Well, you can add other things on and things like that, but in physics, like as soon as you do that, you would talk about like nucleating some brain anti-brain pair from the
Hacking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'll still never get a map of truth
material.
Still always be a
No, I mean you can. How do you call this? I mean, you can add brain anti-brain pairs, and then you can deform this complex to other things, and you can also deform it to something which I would call deform brains. It's just like that in physics, it's energetically different if I just have a tachyon and roll down the potential, or if I first have to like nucleate some brain anti-brain pairs from the vacuum.
But I'm just saying, Max, if you do a deformation of that complex,
yeah,
you will always get a direct cell.
Mm-hmm.
It'll always split.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Even if you add things on,
mm-hmm. Yeah, you can, okay.
If you move one of them by two, mm-hmm. two places in the drive category, which would still have the same thing, still represent the same thing, then you'd be able to get a non-trivial problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so this is a summary of the first part of the talk. I've discussed like some monodomies in an example which exhibits some torsion. The torsion charge in this example didn't really do anything interesting, so it doesn't undergo monodromy. I didn't really say this very explicitly, but at the Gapner point you see explicitly that this doesn't have monodromy. At large volume it doesn't have monodromy either, and therefore it cannot have monodromy at the Corney fault point too. Then we found the stable brain interbrain system at the Gapner point, and we expect that this thing decays at large volume to some energetically more favorable configuration. Okay, I move on to part two of the talk, which is about Ramon-Ramon fluxes. I need to change my example here in order to be able to discuss something. The example I'm discussing here is a Z2 orbifold of the model K3 times T2, which was discussed in the context of string-string duality by Ferrara, Harvey, Strominger, and Waffa. So this Z2 acts on the K3 as an Enriquez involution and on T2 by inversion. And like taken together, the Z2 acts freely on this space. So the resulting space is then an elliptic vibration over the Enriquez surface. So these authors used this model to derive an n equals 2 dual pair starting from an n equals 4 dual pair. Namely, they started from the duality 2a on k3 times t2, 2 heterotic on t6, which has n equals 4. And they then identified how this geometric Z2 translates on the heterotic side. And then what they found is that there's only a simple or heterotic dual if we turn on a Z2 Ramon-Ramon-Wilson line on the 2A side. So what I want to do here is to investigate the consequences of that Wilson line on the allowed D brain charges. So for this, I first need to discuss a little bit about the K-theory of that model. Again, we are interested in K0, and this is given by Z to the 24 plus Z2 to the 4th. So not, yeah? Yeah, so you have like some Narayan lattice compactification, and they identify a particular Z2, how that acts on the lattice to mimic how the... No, no, the Wilson line is supposed to be on the 2A side. So if you match the Z2 on the heterotic side, then they realized that in order to fulfill level matching on the heterotic side, you need this Z2 Wilson line on the 2A side.
I guess you, so what's the heterotic view? I don't understand the query side. What's the heterotic view?
So you have like this, on the 2A side, you have an action on the homology. So, and that lattice is like, was like something like E8 plus E8 plus H plus H. And so the Enriquez interchanges those things. And so on the heterotic side, these E8 lattice is given by the Narayan lattice. And now you mod out by a Z2, which acts on that lattice like you want from the type 2 side. Okay, so where was I? Yeah, I wanted to, okay, so in order to see the effect I want to discuss, we need to discuss the torsion part of the K-theory and very little of the free part of the K-theory. So the first thing is that one can easily see is that the fundamental group of the model is Z to the power of 2 coming just from the torus. Then we take the semi-direct product with the Z2 coming from the orbifold. From this I can determine H lower 1, which is Z2 cubed since the C2 acts on that torus by inversion. And from that I know what H upper 2 torsion is. That is now Z2 cubed, and we have three torsion generators, chi naught, chi 1, chi 2, for that group. So this gives me three flat line bundles, L0 till L2. From those, I get three K3 classes, alpha naught, alpha 1, alpha 2. And one of them is indeed the K3 class that corresponds to the Ramon de Mont-Wilson line in the old paper. So then,
is that K0 the theory for the K3 times T2?
This is the K theory of the orbifold model, so of the K3 times T2 modded out by the Z2 action. So the covering theory just has the K-theory, has three parts in the K-theory.
So it's like,
you mean like if you let the Z2 act in some different way?
Yeah. Because, yeah. Right, I mean, because I mean, since we could change the Naranja axis, maybe I mean, if it's the Z2 then the action is similar.
Well, so if you change the orbifold action in general, you will change the K3 of the resulting model. Okay, so this other K3 class which I need has something to do with brains wrapping around the Enriquez surface. And for this I consider a line bundle L which has a first Chern class theta naught, and this is the two form which is coming, which is inherited from the torus part of the model. So from this I get a K0 class which I call A naught. So I'm still missing one of the torsion classes which I need. And I get that fourth torsion class now by taking the tensor product of this class with the class alpha naught. I get a class alpha tilde. Okay. So now we want to discuss some restrictions of D-brain charges in Ramon-Ramon backgrounds, and a proposal for this was made in the triples paper. And their proposal is that the whatever flux I turn on corresponds to some class in K-theory, and then they say only those K-theory charges are allowed that are annihilated by this flux alpha naught. So I take the K3 class of the flux, I tensor it with the K3 class of the brain, and if the result is zero, then the brain charge is allowed, and otherwise not. I should say that they discuss this proposal in a very, in a kind of special context, namely they consider equivariant K3 of certain singular manifolds. And here we are in a kind of different situation, namely we are just in a smooth model. Okay, so we will see that this proposal doesn't quite work in our case. So like taking the kernel is kind of a natural operation, like how to get a nice subgroup, but there's like an obvious other way to get a nice subgroup, namely we can just mod out by the image. So we make another proposal for what the allowed D-brain charges should be in that flux. And the proposal is that the right K group is just K modded out by a lattice gamma alpha naught, where this gamma alpha naught is just the group of all charges in the K theory which can be generated by tensoring with alpha naught. So in the concrete example at hand, there's just one K3 class which I obtain in this way, and that was the class alpha tilde I had in the previous transparency, which was obtained by tensoring alpha naught with this Enriquez class A naught. Okay, so to check which of these proposals is working in the example at hand, I go to a special point in moduli space, which was discussed in the FHSV paper from the heterotic side. Namely, they notice that there's a special point in the Narayan lattice where we have some additional massless states. Namely, there was a point where we have an SU2 vector multiplet and four fundamental hypers. So in the context of type 2 compactifications, we get additional massless states in situations where the compactification space degenerates and some cycles shrink to zero, and the brains which are wrapping around that cycle become massless. So there's one n equals 2 degeneration, so which leads to n equals 2 supersymmetry in the uncompactified dimension in this model. And that is a degeneration where the whole n weakness is shrinking to zero. So now the task is to recover this field content at that point in moduli space from brains wrapping around cycles. So how can we wrap this Enrico surface? So first of all, let me say that there are four fixed points on the T2 which lead to sections of the vibrations. And this means that I have four possible divisors which are labeled by the fixed points on the T2. Then in addition, I cannot just wrap the brain on that divisor, but I can also turn on a flat line bundle on that thing. This gives me altogether 8 K-theory classes, 2 for each fixed points, which I've listed here. This is the label for the fixed points, and these are the K-theory classes. So these are 8 possibilities to wrap the Enricus ones. Then there's another kind of divisor which I have, namely I can consider D4 brains that double cover the Enricus, then I don't have to be at one of these fixed points, but I can just consider a pair which is related by the involution. Those brains are then free to move around on this T2, and they have twice the charge of one of these brains, so that means they just have the charge 2A0, since all of these were like torsion charges. Okay, so this looks like a fine candidate for the vector multiplet, and all of these look like fine candidates for the hyper multiplets. So now we have to like invoke this Ramond background flux to get rid of some of the stuff. So first we try the proposal that we have to tensor alpha naught with B to figure out the remaining charges. But the result is that this K-theory class remains, so the vector remains, but all 8 candidates for hypermultiplets get projected out using that proposal. Then we check out the other proposal, namely modding out by this group gamma alpha naught. This also leaves us this K-theory class, and these K-theory classes get identified, so that altogether we have 4 hypermultiplets in the game, which reproduces the right field content. Yeah. Ferrara, Harvestom, and Jamafa. Yeah. Yes, on the heterotic side, you just have like certain radii, like radii of the lattice, which can have special value, like square root of 2 or 1, or square 1 over square root of 2 or something, and then you have this SU2 gauge symmetry. And they count the hypers, and that's the result. Okay, so what can I conclude from this discussion of the fluxes? So first of all, we saw an example which confirmed that Ramond fluxes have to change the group of allowed D-brain charges. Then we can all just say that there are 2 proposals for how this is going to happen, and both of them work in like 1 examples or in certain classes of examples. And so obviously, like, the open question is to find one criterion that works in all cases. Yeah. These other, other involutions typically have fixed points, and then I don't really know how to figure that out.
Okay, thank you.